Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living, a program designed to educate and inspire listeners throughout Indian country. American Indian and Alaskan Native Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he is here today to help you learn more about your health. Here is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got another great show lined up for you. We're in the venue of the National Tribal Health Conference. It's 2025. The month is September, and we're in the Phoenix, Arizona area. We're talking with people who are making a difference in Indian country, and two of them are sitting right across from me in our virtual studio. Right next to me, Amol Dhaliwal. Amol, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. DeRose. Excited to talk today.
And right across from me and sitting next to you is Carrie O'Rourke. Carrie, it's great to have you with us as well.
Yeah, we're excited about this conversation today.
You guys are part of the same team. My wife and I, as we've been interfacing with folks here at the conference, we were walking through the exhibit hall, and you guys had an exhibit that definitely caught our attention. You're doing some innovative things. Tell us a little bit about who you guys are representing.
That's exactly right, David. So we work for a company called OnMed. We're a healthcare company that is exclusively focused on expanding access to healthcare. We want to help identify where the gaps in care are across the country, whether that's on tribal land or not. We just are solely in the business to expand access to healthcare. And our answer to that was the OnMed Care Station. It's a clinic in a box, where all of the diagnostic tools are built into the floors, walls, ceilings of the unit, and we can do about 80% of what is normally done in a primary care office, we can do right inside of our OnMed care station.
Okay, now you've definitely got my interest. I mean, you already did, and that's why we've got you on the show, but we want to talk about this concept. Carrie, how do you and Amol fit into this organization?
So we're both, we both have a public policy government background. I worked predominantly in Florida, and Amol, we actually is also in Florida. When you think about healthcare, really kind of all roads lead back to the government. It's a pretty regulated industry, but the government's very involved in providing healthcare for Americans. And unfortunately, what we're seeing today is healthcare is really a privilege to have access. And so that's why, I mean, Amol said we're solely focused on that. We really are a mission-driven organization. Everyone that has come to the company really believes in removing these barriers. We really are focused in working in underserved communities, both in rural and urban America. But we're passionate about it. We've got incredible stories of the patients that we've been able to serve, that some of them haven't been to a doctor in 10 years. Some Wow. have never been to a doctor. We're meeting with women that are recently pregnant, where their first point of contact, they don't have primary care physicians. And so there's just been some really powerful, incredible stories. And then, you know, part of this is really elevating that story, elevating the need, and then to be able to come to you with a solution like OnMed that is, if you see it, it's very Star Trek-y. You know, we actually have a thermal scan in the care station that can detect inflammation if you have a sinus infection. And what's really also exciting about it is the patients are fully engaged in the visit. So you've got all the diagnostic tools. You're sitting across a 65-inch screen is the clinician. So you really feel like it's a personal connection. And they walk you through to you how to use the different diagnostics. And then you're seeing up on the screen what they're seeing. So usually when you go to the doctor, you're being poked, prodded. Here's a script. Next, you know, the average time in a doctor's office is what, under 5 minutes? Well, we spend about 19 minutes with our patients. So we're really proud about that, about spending the time to get to know them, to build that trust. And so it's an incredible company, great stories. And so we've just had some phenomenal conversations the past couple of days, talking about how we can really help some of the tribal communities across the country.
So we're really interested in hearing some of those stories on this episode of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. But first, we want to get the concept down better. So just to frame this, so both my wife and I, many of our listeners know, are both physicians. We're primary care physicians. I'm internal medicine. My wife, family practice. And we've spent a fair portion of our careers working with underserved communities. Right now, we're both doing some telemedicine. But when I do telemedicine, I'm just sitting at a computer screen. My patient may be in their home. They may be actually in a physical clinic location, but I currently don't have the capacity with the system we have to listen to their heart, listen to their lungs, get any kind of physical parameters other than if they walk through the doors of the clinic where my practice is based, where an MA can do vital signs or weigh them, whatever. So tell us a little bit, Amol, about how your approach differs. What is this clinic in a box concept?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for that question, David. So I think what really sets us apart from other telehealth infrastructure companies is our robust diagnostic screenings, right? Mm-hmm. So when you walk into that care station, I mean, right from the beginning, that door is going to lock behind you. It's going to fog for privacy because we're really focused on patient privacy. For some of our populations that aren't as tech literate, we make it as simple as possible. There's a 60-inch screen standing right in front of the patient and a big green button that says start, and that begins the entire process. So after that, when the triage process begins, we have a blood pressure cuff link that can see patients ages 2 and up. We have a weight scale built into the ground. As Carrie mentioned, we have that thermal scan that can detect for any sort of inflammation. We've got a stethoscope for heart and lung. And, you know, I think, again, that really is what sets us apart from other companies, because while you may be able to do a telehealth appointment from the comfort of your own home, that provider doesn't really have access to some of the readings and the data and the services that OnMed is able to offer.
So I'm trying to get this idea of how this stethoscope works. As a physician, we put the stethoscope in certain places to listen to certain heart valves or listen to the lungs from a certain area. Am I instructing the patient?
You are. That's correct. Yes.
And they say, oh, no, move that over a little bit. Is that how it works?
Exactly. So that's exactly what happens. And so the patient is very engaged. And so I think there's an educational component about as you go through that process, we're kind of teaching patients to take ownership in their healthcare and their wellness. And so I think that's what's also so exciting. It's just this natural education as the clinician is asking them to move it over. You know, they're seeing the pulse, the rates on the screen. There's a high-def camera as well for eye, ears, nose, throat. We've also been able to do some basic dental. Folks have come in with a dental pain. We've been able to look at that and to make those specialist referrals out. There's an otoscope, so you can look inside the ear as well. So it really gives a comprehensive, really detailed overview of what's going on with that patient. So while you're not putting your hands on physically onto the patient, through those diagnostics, you're able to do that remotely.
No, I mean, it's fascinating to us, for those of us that do telemedicine in kind of a low-tech telemedicine environment, we have challenges. I mean, someone says, you know, I've got this rash or this little spot on my skin. We don't have a high-resolution camera. And I'm saying, yeah, it looks like that may be a little red, and I'm putting that referral through to the dermatologist. Whereas if I was in the clinic with them, I might say, oh, that's just an irritated seborrheic keratosis. It's benign. You don't need to be worried. And I can't do that in the present setting that I'm in. So how does this work? It's this clinic in a box, like you said. Are you actually locating these clinics permanently in certain places? Do you travel around a certain area? So if let's say folks in the Navajo Nation said, we want 5 of these and they can move them around. How does the process work?
Yeah, so we're currently in nearly 10 states and Puerto Rico. So we're all across the country. The only requirement right now is that it has to be inside. It requires a 3-pronged plug. But really, David, we want to bring the care to where the patients need it most, right? And so in that sense, it's very flexible where the setting is for these care stations. Whether that's a senior center in Reno, Nevada, whether it's higher education institutes across rural Alabama, whether it's an airport in Connecticut, we are just trying to find where there are gaps in care and bring that care to that community.
It's very versatile where you can place them. Like Amol said, it's powered by standard electricity. We hardwire into broadband, but we're also compatible with satellite. So in rural Alabama, we're using Starlink, and it's working phenomenal. But we're in schools, libraries, ag extension offices. We're in a sheriff's office in rural Texas. It's providing access to both the employees, the prisoners, and to the community at large. So because it's a small footprint, about the size of a Mini Cooper, the options of where you can place these are pretty vast.
So once someone connects with you. You're building a physical location. You bring this unit in and it's placed somewhere. It doesn't move. It's not mobile.
Correct. It's modular. So if we're seeing the usage rate isn't as high and you want to move it to another location, we certainly can move that. But the idea is for it to be a consistent resource for the community. One of the things that we're finding out with the mobile units, you know, folks don't know necessarily when they're coming and it's once a week, but we want to make sure that we are providing care that's consistent. Everyone knows where it's at and where it's located. Our traditional operating hours are 8 to 6, but we can go 8 to 9. We can do 24-hour care. And we're also, you know, partnering with FQHCs and health clinics. So it can be their clinicians that see patients through our care station. They can do business hours. We can do after hours and on the weekend. So it's very versatile in location and partnership. So we're able to kind of fill those gaps across the board.
So I love that you're already giving us some stories about places that have been utilizing your OnMed clinic. Is that a appropriate terminology to use? Let's just make sure that I've got this correct. I mean, I can imagine a phone booth. If I'm just listening, I mean, I've seen you've got some great graphics, you've got videos that you're here showing attendees, but we're doing radio. So can someone envision like a big phone booth? Is that a crude way to describe it? Or are you starting to get, I can see some consternation on your faces. How would you describe it?
I feel like the first time I walked in, what I kind of thought about it is, you know, those old timey photo booths you would take at the mall?
Mm.
It would spit out a 3 of those pre-printed pictures.
Uh-huh.
I would say it's bigger than that, but it's the same type of idea where instead of peeling back a curtain, sitting inside, it's a door. And standing right in front of you is this 60-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a provider on the other end of it that's also standing, right? And so it legitimately feels, David, like you and I are speaking just the way we are right now.
Mm.
What's funny is I imagine Amal's a little bit younger. I don't think he knows what a phone booth is.
Okay,
so, you know, so yeah. He might have been struck by that. Not sure.
Yeah. Well, and I wasn't referring to the size. I mean, phone booth is just this little, I mean, like a tiny shower. But the idea is you're immersed in a setting and you said you actually have the capacity to dim the
lights, right?
I can be in this OnMed clinic. Someone's walking by. They're not seeing me.
Correct.
Nothing that I'm doing is visible.
Soundproof. Mm-hmm. The glass will fog over. We'll ask to make sure that the patient's so comfortable with that in case they're claustrophobic. We don't have to fog the glass over, but ideally for privacy, the glass would fog up. Yeah, and it looks very futuristic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is. I think that's kind of everyone that works at the company or folks that we've taken in for demos, they are blown away. Like, wow, this is pretty cutting edge. This is incredible.
So if someone wants to see this, they want to jump on a website or something, is there capacity for someone to watch a video or something?
Absolutely. So it's onmed.com. onmed.com. And we've got them actually, we're in the Hartford Airport in Hartford, Connecticut. If you happen to go through there, you could stop into the care station and you could hit start and you could have a visit.
Okay. So simply onmed, onmed.com?
Correct.
Yes, sir.
Correct.
The website is as easy as it is to walk into the care station.
Really? That easy?
That easy.
Okay. We don't want to hold you to that, but we'll check it out. I love that it's in Hartford. Now, you may not know this, and I don't think you do, but this radio show started over 20 years ago, and a lot of the tribes that were very involved with envisioning the radio show, and we have an accompanying magazine called American Indian and Alaska Native Living, have their roots in that part of the country.
Wonderful.
So, we've had the privilege of flying into Hartford and working with some of the Native nations that are in that part of the country. So this definitely ties in with our roots as a radio show. So the next time I'm in Hartford, I've got to see if I can get into one of these, but it's not just anybody can just walk in, is it?
Anybody can walk in, absolutely. And it's at no additional cost. So that's what's been wonderful with a lot of our partners. They want to make sure that there are no barriers to care. So there's no additional cost. If you do have insurance, we can collect your insurance information and then our partners can bill. But all of our care stations are open at no cost to the public, which is really wonderful.
We have to step away briefly. Can you guys stay for another segment?
Absolutely.
We want to hear some of the stories. We want to understand this concept. We want to especially talk about how it can impact Indian country. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm talking with some of the experts from OnMed, Healthcare Anywhere. That's what we're talking about. We'll be back with more right after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please reach out to us on the web at aianl.org. That stands for American Indian Alaska Native Living. Again, aianl.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope. Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
When Jim died, I wondered if I would be able to keep the farm. Then I heard about the USDA's loan program for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. It's for women and minorities who may be having trouble getting credit. Once I was approved, the USDA's Farm Service Agency helped me get the credit I needed. Now I don't have to sell, and I can pass the farm down to my kids the way Jim's dad passed it down to him. I know he'd like that.
Contact your local USDA service center or visit www.fsa.usda.gov.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're here at the National Tribal Health Conference. We are not actually in the exhibit area. Many of you know when we do things remotely, we're often in exhibit halls. And some of you, if you enjoy that background noise and that enthusiasm, wonderful. But others of you may have said, boy, there's a lot of extraneous noise. So we're in a little bit quieter setting. We're in a hotel room right here at the convention venue. The Gila River community graciously has served this community and really the world. They've got beautiful facilities here. That's where we are. That's where the conference is taking place. And we are in a hotel room. And I am talking with Amol Dhaliwal and with Carrie O'Rourke with OnMed. You guys have been getting me excited about, well, kind of a different way, a way to upgrade our telemedicine capacities. How long have you guys been doing this?
I've been with the company for about a year, but I've known a lot of the leadership for almost 20 years.
Okay. So this is not like something that just started yesterday.
No. The company's been around for about 6 years. A lot of folks that are a part of this, again, it's a mission for all of us, but have come from the healthcare space and have seen really what's gone wrong, recognize that the system is broken and are looking to try and make a real difference and to lean into innovation and technology to be able to reach Americans, you know, all across the country.
We do want to hear some stories. You know, we know you're touching people, and is it 10 locations right now that you've got a footprint?
We're, say, 10 states, nearly 10 states, yes, sir.
10 states. Okay, thanks for keeping me straight, because I'm just learning about what you're doing.
All right, we're going to get you into a care station.
Okay, I'm looking forward to this. Yeah.
But David, I'd love to tell you a little bit about kind of a case study at one of our locations, and that is in Lafette, Alabama. So this is a partnership that we have with Auburn University. It's a town of about 2,700 people. And over the course of about 18 months, we've had nearly 2,000 consultations.
Wow.
And so we've been able to see over half the town. And I think the more telling statistic is that 37% of those visits were repeat visits, right? Mm. So folks are feeling comfortable enough to make this their medical home, right? Mm-hmm. Carrie touched upon this earlier. A lot of the times, these are folks who've not been to the doctor in 10, 20, 30 years, maybe ever. And now all of a sudden, because we brought the care to them, they are able to be connected to their provider and they are able to get that health care that they so badly need.
So Carrie, let me put this in, you know, the perspective maybe of a tribal health program. And I know you're here because you're talking with tribal nations. If a tribe says, look, we've got a large population spread out, very diverse, people are having trouble with access. If you identify a certain location in partnership with the tribe, I mean, they're making that identification, then what all can you bring to the table? Do you actually bring the providers?
Yeah, great question. So we can bring the providers. Ideally, we want to partner with an FQHC, the local health system. We have our own clinicians that will staff. You know, we are able to recruit nationally, but all of our folks are licensed and credentialed within the states that they're answering calls. So we can actually, if we're working with a health system, we can credential them through that health system. We can brand the care station with their logo. So it's really just an extension of their footprint. It's much more cost effective to place care stations around than to build brick and mortar. Again, it's an expansion of their footprint. And because we want to have a real partnership, it can be their clinicians that see the patients or it can be ours. They can see patients business hours, we can cover after hours and the weekends, it can just be ours. So it's really however our partners want to structure the partnership.
So let me tell you a little bit about my current telemedicine practice, and you can tell me how it differs. So I'm actually tied to a region. So we talked about these federally qualified health centers. So I'm working out of a clinic that's based in Northern California. So I lived in Northern California for a number of years, even though I'm now based in the Midwest. And so I'm still seeing a patient population that I had worked with over some years. They have to physically come, though, to a location, to a clinic, unless we make special accommodations for me to do a home visit. So we do that as well. But they actually come in, they see my medical assistant, have their vitals measured, etc. If we need to administer something on site, that can be done. If they need a B12 shot or an immunization or something, I do have a PA who's on site who can see them if they need the personal touch. I can't listen to their heart and lungs. We've already said that. I can't do a thermal scan with the capacities that we have. So why I'm painting that picture for you is because they have the physical location, just like you're talking about, but it's actually tied to my availability and we are actually scheduling them. And I wonder how this works as far as scheduling. Do people work through some kind of central site? Do you have a person doing it? There's some complexities here that are still eluding me is how this works. Help me understand.
Absolutely. So as of right now, our care stations are on demand. We hope that we can get an appointment-based system.
It's based on what the sponsor would like. If they'd like an appointment-based system, we can do that. What we've seen is that folks like that flexibility of just being able to show up and have it on demand. And a lot of the conversations that we've had this week, no-shows have been a big issue for health centers. And it's a cost, right? Mm-hmm. They're holding that spot. No one shows up. And it's a cost, you know, to the system. So we love that we are on demand. And there's a lot of that flexibility there. But if folks want to be able to schedule, we could make that an opportunity.
So if I'm getting the picture correctly, someone says, hey, we've got this new OnMed center in our community center, at our tribal health center, whatever. I mean, tribal health center usually has, you know, facilities already, but I'm just saying some kind of venue, maybe in a casino, you know, wherever it might be. And someone says, hey, I'll just walk by there, see if there's no one over there. Maybe I'll drop in and maybe they're doing something else in the area. Maybe it's a community, any kind of venue where people are gathering, if they see that there's no one in the unit. They can just walk in and say, I'm here.
Yep. The glass will be clear. You'll see that there's nobody in there. Once someone does go in, it'll say in use on the top, the glass fog, so that you know it's in use.
Okay. So if someone brings you folks on board, tell us a little bit more about the airport that you have a presence in. I want to understand how that works.
Yeah, so we're partnering with Hartford Health System. They've got three care stations across the community there, one in a pharmacy, one in an outpatient mental health facility, and then most recently, we've launched in the Bradley Airport. And again, this is about creating, expanding that access to care across the community there. You know, we're working in underserved communities, and so they just want to make sure they've got a good footprint and to really, again, like Amal said, bring the care to the community.
So someone's at Bradley Airport and they're having some chest pain and they walk into this unit and someone says, I'm having crushing pain, I'm sweating. And this seems to be more than just a clinic visit. So what is the process there? Do you have protocols or how does this work?
Absolutely. We have had to call 911 several times in the care station. People aren't feeling well. They come in. They're actually either having a stroke or a heart attack. As part of our playbook, you know, we're tied into EMS. We're able to alert EMS. We stay on the phone until they show up. We can unlock the door when they arrive. If we're in a community center or a library, we're able to contact someone at the front desk as well so that there could be someone on site immediately. That's definitely happened. It's part of our protocol, and we are prepared to address those situations.
So tell us a little bit more about some of the other venues where you have your facility.
Yeah, so I can tell you that in Florida, we are currently in a homeless shelter in Tampa, Florida, and we are in a juvenile homeless welfare center in Fort Lauderdale and Miami. To tell you a little bit more, in Texas, we are in a state college, Navarro College. And some of our other higher education institutes include Auburn University, like I mentioned, as well as Tuskegee University and South Carolina State University. We're in a Fiesta Mart in Texas as well.
Fiesta Mart. What is that, a grocery store?
Correct. Yes.
Really? Okay. Wow. So you guys have a very, very interesting footprint in 10 states.
Yep.
Variety of locations.
Correct.
How does someone get in touch with you, say, hey, we want to explore this more, whether they're a tribal entity, whether they're someone tuning into the show, maybe not from any native background at all, they're working in, you know, government, maybe they're in the healthcare sector, or maybe they're just a community member that says, hey, we need some more options in our community. What's the process?
They can absolutely go to our website, onmed.com, and there's a section there where they can ask. There's an inquiry. Send us just an email, info@onmed.com, and we'll be able to respond immediately. This is the day and age where everybody's working remotely. We've got folks all over the country, so we'll be able to respond. We've got, again, if they want to come see the locations physically, we can do demos across the country as well, but we can also do virtual demos. So there's a lot of opportunities for us to really show what the care station can do.
Tremendous. I'm excited about what you guys are doing.
Yeah. And Carrie and I are both on LinkedIn as well. So we do really kind of urge people to try and connect with us on LinkedIn, and we'd be more than happy to go from there as well, David.
Wonderful. Amal Dhaliwal and Carrie O'Rourke, thank you guys both for joining us today.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you. It's wonderful.
We've got a lot more coming up in today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Stay by. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Our second half of the show will be right up after this.
American Indian and Alaska Native Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please contact us on the web at aianl.org or call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
A message from the National Police Association. It used to be that any able-bodied person would offer to assist a police officer in danger. Now, passersby are more likely to take a video. There's a better use for your phone when an officer's in trouble. Call 911. Tell the operator where you are and what you see. Then, start your video to provide evidence later. To learn more about how you can assist law enforcement, visit nationalpolice.org. That's nationalpolice.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I've got two other great guests in our virtual studio here. If you're just joining us with the National Tribal Health Conference 2025, the month is September. We're in the Phoenix, Arizona area, and I'm sitting across two individuals who are involved with Natsu Health. If you're not familiar with that organization, they're going to tell us all about it. Victor, tell us a little bit about the organization that you represent.
Sure, of course. Natsu Healthcare and Natsu Behavioral Health, we are actually in Twilley, Utah. We're about 30 minutes west of Salt Lake City, and we have a healthcare facility. It's a small facility. We have three providers. We do family care, dentistry, and optometry. And then the big bulk of our work is behavioral health. So we have a substance use facility. We have a 60-bed facility for men and a 60-bed facility for women.
Wow.
We also have an intensive outpatient program and outpatient program.
Wow. Excellent. And Michelle Main is sitting next to Victor Garcia. So Victor, my understanding is your role with the organization is CEO, correct?
Correct.
And how long have you been with Natsu Health?
I have been with Natsu Health 5 years.
Okay, excellent. Sitting next to you, could you introduce your colleague, please?
Absolutely. So we have our Chief Behavioral Health Officer here, Michelle Main.
Beautiful. Thanks, Victor. So I am a new recruit to Natsu Health. I've only been with Natsu for about 4 months now. Prior to that, I've got about 34 years in the field. So a lot of time in the field. And Victor gave a beautiful overview of our program. And the bulk of our program is the behavioral health side of things.
Mm-hmm. So now tell us a little bit about your background, Michelle. You mentioned this wealth of experience. What all have you done in your career?
Oh, goodness. There's a lot there. Started in the early 90s working in an emergency room. I was at the bottom of the barrel at that time and decided to go to school and got a bachelor's. And then I was working with an agency called Prevent Child Abuse Utah that was a sister agency to the National Center on Shaken Baby Syndrome. Had 14 counties that I was over with that. Got on with a division of Child and Family Services, worked CPS, then worked forensic interviewing for sex abuse cases, and then ran a DV shelter. And from that, went to in-home care. And then from there, went to private practice. Opened up my own agency, and for the last 13, 14 years, I've had a private practice mental health agency that I recently left, actually, so that I can come over and join forces with Natsu. And this was such a beautiful, and David, I need to share this part, but the beauty of this was I'm at the end of my career, and I wanted an area that was a macro level of exposure and experience and giving back. And the idea was, you know, we are servants of our community. We serve those that we see. And Natsu has such a beautiful, spiritual, holistic approach to the whole person that it was so, it called me for sure.
Wow.
And so when I came over to Natsu, everything that Natsu stands for, that we stand for, that what we do, it is to serve those that are in our community, to serve those that are in our tribes, to serve those that have been disenfranchised, that have not had the services that we would like to see. And so the connection, the community that we've built and we continue to build is just something to see.
Love the vision. Victor, I know you've had an amazing journey too to get where you're at. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure, absolutely. So it's interesting enough, I've been in healthcare for a little over a decade. Started my career in military health, currently with the Utah Air National Guard. Work as a medic there, so I've been part of a medical unit. So I've been doing that for about 12 years. Prior to that, I worked in for-profit education, but my main experience has been healthcare, healthcare administration, recruiting, so a variety of different areas in healthcare. Interestingly enough, to kind of fill into the role, Skull Valley Band of Goshutes are the owners of Natsu Healthcare. They were starting their Natsu Healthcare at the time. It was just a year out when I joined. And from there, we have kind of built that and went from a facility of about maybe 15 people, 30 employees, to we're about 180 employees right now. And we have probably, let me think here, I think we have about, I'm trying to think, here, 60-something clients. I'm trying to remember that. Maybe on the 70 clients, so we're not at full capacity yet. But
I think we're probably close to 70 right now. Yeah, RTC.
So basically, as I'm kind of listening to your description here, I mean, this is unusual in a sense because a lot of folks who are at a national conference, they have a national program. Your program is based serving a local community, but you're drawing people from all over the country. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah. So our objective, our focus is with the native population. That is our focus. Of course, we take our non-native population there in our areas, but our focus are with the 8 surrounding tribes in Utah. And within Utah, then we're focusing on other tribes that are outside of Utah. We have tribes here in Arizona, Idaho, Colorado, New Mexico, California. And then we have tribes from the East Coast that are sending us people. The challenge you find that within Indian country with substance abuse facilities is there's not a whole lot of resources. You know, I just ran into North Dakota tribe. They have about 5 substance abuse facilities. Chairman Fox over there, their tribe, they have quite a bit of stuff in Oklahoma, California. But if you look at it, they're typically most tribes will have an outpatient services. And then they'll most likely send anyone in need to local, what's close to them.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge with that is it's not culturally based. It's not focused. It's more westernized. So there's a lot of handicaps that are in those programs. So that's kind of where we come in.
Okay.
No, we're tribally owned. So that's a significant difference too.
No, that's exciting. So basically someone listening today, if they're not familiar with Natsu Health, but they say, hey, we've been sending our tribal members to a local, you know, non-native facility. Maybe they're not, well, all that enamored with the results. Maybe they've gotten complaints, concerns that people are not sensitive to some of the native values. What you're saying is, hey, we want to be on your radar screen because we will be happy to service your tribal members, provided they're willing to fly out to Salt Lake City or drive out to your neck of the woods, right?
Absolutely. And depending on the circumstances, we're a Medicaid facility. So that's really what we take, Medicaid, and we have relationships with different tribes. But depending on the circumstances, we may be willing to fly them out.
Oh, wow.
So it depends on the circumstances. There's a few things that we can kind of look at. If the tribe has any funds, if they don't, if the NGO has funds, if not, we can kind of look at that and try to bring those individuals over to our facility. So that's definitely an option.
Now, I know someone here at the venue, talking with a Native woman that I've had some contact with in the past, and she was very excited that she had met you guys. She had a family member or a friend or something who was in need of mental health services, especially, you know, dealing with addictions and some drug-related issues, and was just very enthused about learning about your program. Is that a common response you're getting at this venue?
We definitely do. And I think that that has been the beauty, is that when people start to understand who we are and what we represent and the ceremony that we add and the culture that is the basis of who we are, it feels like home for many of our clients. So they're able to come in and we're recognizing and we're understanding and we're promoting all of the things that they were exposed to. And so recovery's hard. Recovery's difficult for folks. And it is not picky. It hits every family,
that's right,
every socioeconomic class, every ethnicity. But what we can offer within our program is that taste of home, of the ceremony, of the culture that is so vital to, again, when we look at somebody and we think about that global approach, the best way that we're going to decrease recidivism is to be able to help the whole person. And in order to help the whole person, we have to bring in the beauty of culture. And that is truly what NATSU does. On top of very effective clinical staff, effective programming, we just continue to build.
It's exciting. Now, folks, they are hearing for the first time, some of them, about NATSU Health. They're wondering even how to spell it, how to look you guys up. Can you help us, Victor, how someone can track you down?
Sure, absolutely. Our website is natsuhealth.com. That's spelled N-A-T as in Tom, S-U as an umbrella, then health, the word health.com. They can find us there. They look through services and go through our behavioral health. There's a number there. They can call us at that phone number. It goes straight to our admissions office. For those that are listening, our number is 435-714-7376, and that reaches right to our admissions team. And we can help. If they're out of state, that's not a problem. We work with a lot of out-of-state tribes, out-of-state families. As Michelle said, one of the biggest challenges is sometimes people don't understand addiction. And in the challenges is we have, I guarantee you, every single person listening on here knows an individual or a family member or someone who's gone through addiction. And I think a lot of times people don't realize how much it's affecting not only Indian country, but just in general, the U.S. and foreign countries and everything else. Just addiction's hard, it's substance abuse. But helping people understand that there is a out. You can recover. You can have a sober life. And that's the beauty of it.
Powerful message. Let me tell you what I've written down. So NATSU Health, N-A-T-S-U health.com. Is that right?
Correct.
And then as far as the phone number, 435-714-7376.
That's right.
Right? Okay. So I know there's a lot of folks that are going to want to reach out to you guys. Before we have to step away from this segment, I know there's so much more we could talk about. I know a lot of folks would love to hear some success stories and other things, but maybe a couple final talking points from each of you. If someone's saying, well, I don't know. I mean, why pick up the phone? Maybe they're a tribal health leader, maybe a tribal council person that doesn't have access to native-based addiction treatment. Why should they check into your website?
Hope. We have to have hope and hope for a better life. We often talk about the red road and finding a way to have balance and peace within ourselves. And this is something that speaks so much to our native community. But following that road of health and hope and promoting that modeling for our generation, for our future generations of health and balance. And that is something that we will continue to promote, that we want to see.
Tremendous, tremendous. Victor, any final thoughts from your vantage point?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked a question. Like I said, addiction comes very close to many people. And it doesn't matter who you are. It's not prejudice. I think really what it comes down to is seeing that there is a different life at the end, meaning you are actively in addiction and you can have a different life. A lot of times I share with our clients, I had an older brother who had a severe addiction, and I get emotional when I talk about this even now, but I talk to him every now and again. I ask him, you know, how have you been in your sobriety? You know, and he says to me, you know, Victor, my life is different. I don't even consider myself being sober. It's just, I am who I am now. He's been sober for over 30 years, and he sees it as part of his life that's just behind him. And I think a lot of times in the midst of addiction, either family seeing the individual or children or whatever it it's very challenging to see someone who might not have that addiction, but it's possible. And the beauty is when you see that individual that's been sober for many years, that their life is complete. They're a new person.
That's
completely.
Right. That's right.
And we have so many examples of that, of people that we've come across, employees, clients, alumni. So I could go on and on about this.
No, it's exciting. So we're so thankful that you guys pulled away. I know you got a busy schedule. You got a strong presence here at the National Tribal Health Conference. Thank you, Michelle and Victor, for pulling away.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
We've got one final segment coming up in today's program. I encourage you to stay by. We're going to be coming right back after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What is a number story?
My number story started with fear and a lack of support, and it has led me to be there for others.
A number story begins in our childhood with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
My number story begins with the separation from my father and the emotional abandonment from my mother, and leads to me being a role model to not only myself, but those around me by becoming the person that wasn't there for me.
ACEs are so common, 2/3 of us have one.
My number story begins with drug abuse and homelessness and leads to realizing that I can live life by my own standards.
A study found the more ACEs, the more likely we may experience a host of serious health effects, physical and mental, but that doesn't need to be the case. Your ACE number is simply an entry point to your own story. Where it leads is up to you.
My number story begins with years of emotional abuse and leads to peace, clarity, and security in my self-worth.
Take control of where your number story leads at numberstory.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to the final segment of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose, and we're still here at the National Tribal Health Conference 2025, just outside of Phoenix, Arizona. We are talking with a number of people making a huge difference in Indian country, and I've got two great people in our virtual studio right now. They represent an organization that you may be familiar with, Make-A-Wish. Ladies, tell us about Make-A-Wish and tell us first about yourselves. Who are you?
Sounds great. Thank you for having us here. My name is Christine Wilmot. I am the tribal ambassador for Make-A-Wish Arizona. I am a member of the Navajo Nation, as well as the Hopi tribe. And I currently work and reside out of Palaka, Arizona on the Hopi Reservation.
Wonderful, wonderful. And who is sitting next to you?
And this is my colleague, Daniela Rios.
Hi, thank you so much for having us today. My name is Daniela Rios, and I'm our Community Outreach and Referral Manager for Central Arizona, and I have been with the organization for 7 years now.
So as a health professional, I've heard about Make-A-Wish for decades, literally. How long have you been around? Do either of you know the history?
Yes. So we have been around since 1980. Make-A-Wish Arizona is actually the founding chapter. So it's
really
something that most people are surprised to learn about.
Well, this is a privilege. I did not realize what we were getting into here.
Yeah.
So the founding chapter, Make-A-Wish started in Arizona.
It did, yes, in 1980. So we just recently celebrated 45 years of granting wishes.
That is beautiful. So a lot of folks, probably the majority of my audience, have heard of Make-A-Wish. But for those who haven't, how would you quickly, succinctly describe what you guys are all about?
Yeah, so we are in the business of wish granting. We have the privilege of granting life-changing wishes to children diagnosed with critical illnesses between the ages of 2.5 through 18.
Wow. So anyone listening today who's going through, just got a tragic diagnosis, maybe they're not expected to live long, or they maybe are dealing with a potentially life-threatening condition. I'm assuming there's some kind of criteria, right? But they can get on the phone, their family, and call Make-A-Wish?
Correct. So we highly encourage them to consult their medical provider along with a social worker, a child life specialist to look into our established criteria. But Make-A-Wish oftentimes is assumed that it's only for children with a terminal illness, and that's not the case. Many of our kids live long and healthy lives. So.
Okay. Great stuff. Now, Christine, you especially represent Indigenous peoples and Make-A-Wish's commitment to dealing with First Nation peoples. Tell us a little bit about why Make-A-Wish has this special priority.
Right. So my role is brand new. I started about 6 months ago. I'm very fortunate that Make-A-Wish Arizona decided to create this role. It was definitely to improve the reach to kiddos in tribal communities. In most tribal communities, that reach to that population is sometimes difficult. It's sometimes hard to do. And so my role is to help build partnership in tribal communities, figure out how we can increase referrals of kiddos that are having critical illness that are eligible for Make-A-Wish. So that's mainly my role, what I do. I do a lot of meeting with tribal hospitals, tribal providers, could also include social workers, but anything we can do to extend that reach to those communities that might not otherwise have access to these kind of resources.
Okay, so let's kind of illustrate this. So a child maybe living on the Navajo Nation is diagnosed with some kind of maybe a genetic disorder that's going to make his or her life very difficult. They hear about the program and the physician, social workers involved, they contact you folks. What kind of wishes are you in the business of granting? What might a child want and what might you be able to deliver?
Yeah, that is a really great question. So we offer a variety of wishes. We have different wish categories ranging from I wish to have, this could be a wish to have a puppy or a shopping spree. We grant many travel wishes to Disney and other international destinations, as well as the wish to be. So a child who would like to be a mermaid for a day or a police officer. So it really varies depending on the child's age and what they have in mind.
Wow, wow. So, Christine, you're new on the team. So tell us what's been getting you excited about your role.
Well, yeah, I wanted to share this, a little backstory to how I came in contact with Make-A-Wish. I'm actually a wish parent.
Wow.
Meaning my child, I have a teenager who recently had a wish granted this year. So in speaking to your previous question of where my daughter chose to go to Japan, so we experienced that this year.
Really?
So it does vary, but that's how I kind of got into this role. And I think my most exciting thing is when I do get to see kids from our communities be able to experience that. So to be able to ask, oh, I want to go to Disneyland, or I want a basketball court, whatever it might be, to have that wish granted and kind of see the impact it has on the family and the community. That's probably the best part of my role.
Now, I've heard many stories about some of the amazing things your group has done. And I'm not a travel agent, but I listened to this stuff and I said, this is costing a bit of money. I mean, you must have either some great resources or you're looking for people to partner with you, or tell me how this works. If someone's saying, well, this is wonderful, I'm just hearing about it for the first time, can I help?
Yeah. So 100% of the dollars that we raise go specifically to the Arizona chapter. So we rely on the support of generous donors that believe in our mission. And whether that's a corporate sponsorship or ways that small businesses can get involved in giving back, we highly appreciate it.
So if someone is excited about what you're doing, they want to learn more, they want to donate, how does someone get a hold of you?
So I would recommend visiting our website, arizona.wish.org, and there you will find opportunities to get involved with the organization as a volunteer. We have internship opportunities, and we also have donor and corporate ways to give back.
arizona.wish.org, and that's where I can find everything I'd want to know about the Arizona chapter of Make-A-Wish Foundation. We have listeners all over the country that are tuning in and they say, well, I live in Oklahoma or I live in Florida or Alaska. What do they do if they want to learn about Make-A-Wish? Still Arizona chapter, because you guys have a vested interest or not?
No. So they can visit wish.org, and that will take them directly to our main profile where they will be able to put in their zip code or what state they live in, and it can connect them to that chapter in their territory.
Yeah. And most states throughout the United States have a chapter in their state. So there is a chapter located in each state that programs in those specific states can access and link to for resources directly.
Daniela, tell us another story. Someone else whose life was impacted by your Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Yeah, well, I will start off by sharing that this past fiscal year, we have granted 475 wishes to children in Arizona. And to share a little bit more about the impact that we have throughout the state, approximately 73% of wishes are in central Arizona, which would include Maricopa, but approximately 15% of those wishes come from southern Arizona and 9% in northern Arizona. So we're really doing everything that we can to reach all of those kids throughout the state. But to share a little bit about wish impact, there are many wishes that have such an incredible impact on the community. Maria's wish is one that stands out to me. So initially, her wish was to go to Disneyland. And this was during the pandemic when there were travel restrictions in place. So we had to reimagine, really talk to her about what that wish meant to her. And the more that we talked to Maria, it was about feeling like a princess and wearing a dress, wearing a tiara, feeling like she was the princess for a day. And what was really special about this experience was that Belle from Disney was able to create a personalized video for Maria speaking Spanish, which was something that we had never done before, Disney had never done before. And so that's something that really speaks volumes to the wishes that we grant and the impact that we have.
So Disney actually collaborated with you to have a personalized message for this young lady.
Yes.
Okay.
We do have a partnership with Disney. We are one of the only nonprofits who work very closely with Disney.
So you guys have not only the business of bonding with families, encouraging folks, but actually being very creative. Is that one of your talents, Christine? Do you bring these creative juices? Is that why they recruited you?
I think I bring the creative juice in part of the tribal partnership and education. And I think staff, we have amazing staff within our organization that are so excellent at all of the wish granting part. We have a whole department for it that they focus on that, and they're amazing at it. Speaking from personal experience from my daughter's wish, from beginning to end, it was a great journey. I might not have the best skill in wish granting. I'm going to build on that. But my focus is how do we get more kids, you know, to come in and be able to experience this joy and these wonderful things.
Now, I know when it comes to a lot of things, if you talk about groups that are labeled as disenfranchised or underserved, sometimes when they hear about programs, they think, oh, well, that's for someone else. Or they see someone who had their wish granted that doesn't look like them, and they're thinking, this doesn't apply to me. Has this been a challenge dealing with the First Nation peoples?
It kind of has. And I think you're speaking to something that even outside of Make-A-Wish is an overall issue and how it's kind of seen. But surprisingly, even in my short time being with Make-A-Wish, I'm seeing that we've actually granted wishes for several kiddos that are from tribal communities.
Wonderful.
So like our first wish ever granted by an actual Make-A-Wish, our chapter was a member and a child from the Pascua-Yaqui tribe. And so to hear those stories, and then when we're sharing those stories with our community members, they're more open to participate instead of thinking that's something not for them to participate in, but it really is there for everybody to be able to enjoy and be a part of.
Beautiful. I love the vision. I love the fact that they've made this big investment in bringing somebody on like Christine. Daniela, any final notes to speak to our listenership as we're winding down here?
So one other thing that I would like to share is that we are always in the need for volunteers. So if you're looking to get involved with your local chapter, we highly encourage you to take a look at our website and find ways to get involved. We're constantly looking for airport send-off greeters or wish granters who are the ones that allow these wishes to take place.
Beautiful. Ladies, our time has slipped away from us. Daniela, Christine, I know you got a busy schedule here. Thanks for pulling away and joining us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having us.
And to each of you, our listeners, I'm Dr. David DeRose. Thank you for joining us for the entirety of today's episode. As always, I'm Dr. DeRose wishing you the very best of health.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.